Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. Welcome to the Hoban Minute. Today, I'm sitting down with the managing partner of Sapphire Risk Advisory Group, Mr. Tony Gallo. Tony, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me here.
So before we jump into the nuances of cannabis security and all the things that you've done, set the table for us. What is Sapphire Risk?
So a little history. So I've been in the retail security field for over 25 years. I've worked for companies such as Sears and Macy's, always in the retail industry. I spent 17 years as the director of security for the largest pawn shop chain in the United States, had 1,300 stores in three countries. About 8 years ago, I started a Sapphire Risk Advisory Group. Our main focus was with high-risk businesses. So that's retail companies that have a large amount of cash and a very desirable piece of merchandise. Our clients were jewelry stores, pawn shop, liquor stores, convenience stores, firearm stores, tobacco stores. I got a phone call from a small company, a company called MJ Biz, who said, we're going to be doing a show in Boston on cannabis cash management. Would you be willing to speak about it? I didn't know much about cannabis at the time. Looked it up, a large amount of cash, very desirable piece of merchandise. Spoke in Boston, 125 attendees, 15 vendors. Fast forward 7 years later in Vegas, over 30,000 attendees at the same show, over 750 vendors. So, you know, getting into the industry 8 years, you know, we're the oldest national cannabis security firm. We've been in 30 states. We've actually been in 31. We're excited. We just entered the state of Montana, which is our 31st state. During that time, we've worked with over 350 clients in the cannabis industry, helping them get their licenses. And we've built out over 60 facilities. Our largest is a 450,000 square foot cultivation facility in Nevada. And our smallest is a 1,200 square foot dispensary in North Dakota. So we're excited to be in the cannabis industry and had been there at the beginning.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that Mr. Hoban always says. He says the industry ages you in dog years, and being in the industry for 8 years would make you just an absolute veteran. You've seen where this industry has come from, just like you said with MJ Biz and the amount of growth, and also you've been a big part of building that industry, and particularly the security side. So we're here in 2021. A lot has changed since those early days. Probably a lot has changed on the security side. Give us a sense of just the evolution of the industry and the evolution of how what service you've provided has changed over the course of those 8 years.
Sure. So when we look at the cannabis industry, I break it into three separate industries. And the first industry would be the states of Colorado, Oregon, and Washington, and some other states you can look at. And that basically it is a low entry into the business, but it's survival of the fittest. So you want to apply and get a license in those states. Entry point is not that difficult, but in a lot of ways, you're going to be fighting with everybody and their brother for that business. So it's survival of the fittest. We look at most of the rest of the country. When you talk about, say, a New Jersey, a New York, a Florida, for instance, and a lot of that is what's called a merit-based application. So the state of Illinois is going to issue X amount of licenses. You apply. Whoever has the highest score gets a license. Once they have a cutoff point of X amount of that they're going to issue, you know, it could be Virginia with 4, it could be Illinois with 75. You don't score enough points, you don't get a license. It's quite easy. The advantages of it is obviously it's a very small market. Your market share is a lot higher, but the entry point is quite more expensive than, say, a Colorado, Oregon, or Washington. And then the third state, which is everything is done differently in California, is the state of California. State of California will issue you a license provided that the city gives you the license to begin with. So the state really isn't too requiring. They require that you have a license from the city, but every city can decide whether they're going to give no licenses, 4 licenses, 50 licenses. So now you're in that merit-based battle again. You know, we're excited that, you know, we do a lot of work in California. We do a lot of work in those merit-based states. And primarily when the initial work that we do in the application is we write the security section of those applications and then design those operating procedures for the stores.
Yeah. And let's talk about how important is that, because it seems like, you know, while those applications probably have many facets, how secure a dispensary, a cannabis business is, it that matters a lot in these merit-based states that you're mentioning. So give us a sense of, you know, some of the applications you've worked on, if you can.
Sure.
Give us a sense of just why that's so important to someone out there who's listening right now, who might be thinking about trying to go after a license potentially in one of these new states that opened up in the last election. You know, why is this something they should be thinking about?
So we have an expression in our office, it's all about the points. And when we're talking about a merits-based application, exactly that. It is all about the points. I have seen people who have not received a license because they've missed it by 3 points out of 1,000. I've seen, you know, it down to fraction of the points where someone gets a license, someone doesn't get a license. And a lot of times when you look at the security section, it's scored quite high in a merit-based state. We're proud to say that our average score is a 94%. When we started, it was closer to an 85%. The difference between 94 and 92 is whether you get a license or not. So we're quite happy with that. You know, we had a run at the end of Q4 where we had 8 100 scores in a row, and we needed every single point. One of our applicants actually won their license by 4 points out of a total of like 500 points. So it's very important that you get every single point. And, you know, the other thing when it comes to the application or writing a security plan, not only is it important in a merit-based to get the license, but even in the states that aren't merit-based, you need to run a business. And what happens is a lot of times people get a license, but they're not profitable. Their margins are horrible. And a lot of that has to do with lack of security, lack of procedures and policies. And, you know, we do a lot of risk assessments. We'll go out to facilities and we'll look at the facility and we'll give back feedback on whether the facility is well run when it comes to security. Majority of our clients are not in the merit-based states, believe it or not. Majority of my clients are in the Colorados, the Oregons, the Washingtons, you know, the Michigans of those states, because a lot of them are losing margins. Either their trash procedures are not good, employees are allowed to steal, cash management is poor, products are going out the door that shouldn't, friends are getting handed out merchandise. So, you know, the importance not only in a merit-based state to win the license when it comes to security, but also in every other business is to be profitable down the line.
Yeah. And, you know, just kind of listening to you talk about that and pairing it with what you said at the beginning about the other high-risk industries that you've provided security for, how different is that? That those seem like those issues of employee theft or not having good SOPs is kind of a condition of maybe an immature industry in a sense. So are those issues that you saw with other industries that you worked in, or do those seem to be pretty cannabis industry specific problems?
So when we look at those industries, we call it the big four. So we look at tobacco, firearms, alcohol, and then we look at cannabis. And those four industries have something very much in common. That is, if a theft occurs of that product, whether it's tobacco, alcohol, a gun, or cannabis, it affects society. So when we work a lot with our jewelers, we're designing jewelry security programs and make sure that they're profitable and that they stay in business. But if they were robbed and they lost all their jewelry, yes, we don't want that to happen. But jewelry being sold on the street isn't going to change society. Imagine what happens if a gun winds up in a kindergarten class, or someone selling alcohol to children, or tobacco is being sold, you know, where it shouldn't be, or if cannabis winds up out there. So a lot of times when you look at the government and the states and the rules and the cities, not having a good security program and having a loss of that magnitude could put you completely out of business. So it's important for us when we look at that is to look at it and encompass that and put those four together. And a lot of times people talk about, well, what about pharmaceutical? Pharmaceutical could be included in that too, if you add it. But again, it's a very desirable piece of merchandise that society does not want out there more so than anything.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, and not something that had even crossed my mind before this conversation, just that the public health and social good component there. As far as the cannabis industry is concerned, in the early days of Colorado, for example, was this an issue when everybody was just trying to figure out how the heck you even got these businesses off the ground? Was this really at the forefront of people's mind, or is this something that over the years, and I think I kind of know the answer here, but even in looking at the what you were talking about, those early states versus the states now who have maybe learned the lessons as the industry has gotten older and we've seen what's worked and what hasn't, how has this become a more important facet of people's businesses over the years? It was always important, but we've just seen it become more important, particularly from the onset, rather than something you're trying to deal with after it's already, you know, become an issue.
And yes, and the answer to that is yes. And the reason why is when cannabis became legal in Colorado, you were allowed to do so many things, but you could still make a profit because people were buying weed all day long. And they really didn't care. So you were making money. Now it's becoming an industry, or it is an industry, where there is profit margins. There is understanding of how to protect your assets. You know, one of the biggest misses in the early years was their safes. Everyone went to Costco or Walmart and bought very poor, cheap safes, things that I can go to Home Depot with and buy a cutting tool and cut right into those safes. And you're storing $50,000, $100,000 worth of cash, $500,000 worth of product in these little cheap, I call them metal boxes. I wouldn't even call them safes. Where the industry's now changed, where they're actually using the safes that jewelers would use or pawn shops would use or large companies would use, TL-rated safes. A lot of what you see came about because these locations would have break-ins. The last riots that occurred, you know, we dealt with, I think it was 86 break-ins throughout the United States of cannabis facilities. And they, in some of these locations, lost a lot, large part of their cash and their product. But none of the ones that had TL-rated safes did. No one got into any of them because they were proven to that value. You see that now a lot when it comes to security, because now in Colorado or Washington, Oregon, it's not that easy anymore. You know, the pound prices are going fluctuated. There's more competition. There are better design companies. So what you were getting away with when you were having a cheap security system, now you won't survive. You just won't be making any more money. So that's what we're seeing, the evolution over the last 8 years of going from someone who started with a cigar box and was taking cash in to now someone who's actually running a business and not what it used to be.
That's an excellent point. And I know we touched on it at the beginning, but let's talk about some of these states, some of these new markets that have emerged as a result of the last election, and just states that, you know, we are seeing large interest in from the industry. So I know you mentioned New Jersey, you mentioned West Virginia, I believe you mentioned mm-hmm. Montana. What are we seeing in these states? What are the new trends? And I think I have a sense that some of these places are, again, moving towards that merit-based application, moving away from, you know, the Wild West element that was here and alive in Colorado in 2012 and 2013. But, you know, what are you seeing in these new states, and what states are you most excited about? Where are you getting a lot of calls from right now for people who are trying to retain your services? Because right. They know it's all about the points, and they know you're the guy who's going to help them get those points.
So when you look at it, you know, geographically, again, east of the Mississippi and west of the Mississippi. Cannabis industry started west of the Mississippi. California, Colorado, Oregon, Washington, one of the early states, Arizona. These were the states that were the forefront of the cannabis industry. Now you're starting to see more heavily populated states. New Jersey is the highest population per capita in the United States. You're seeing New York having some program, Pennsylvania very heavily into it, even Florida now, you know, getting into it. And you're starting to see more East Coast, more east of the Mississippi states, Ohio. You know, right now, the states that excite us is Illinois. You know, we were very heavily involved in Illinois. Illinois is moving forward. They've had cannabis since 2014, but they didn't do anything for almost 6 years. They've opened up the books again, and now they're doing more business and starting issuing more licenses in Illinois, heavily populated. New Jersey is very active. You know, a lot of people ask me, what's the difference between medical marijuana states and adult use? I don't see much of a difference from my point of view. In fact, to me, I think medical marijuana makes more money sometimes in those states. But you're starting to see more adult use in some other states that are coming on. So, you know, the heavy markets that I like right now are Illinois. I'm very excited about New Jersey. We've done four projects in New Jersey already. I'm very excited about West Virginia. I think West Virginia is going to be a good state for their model that they're having. They just came out last week with licenses, and we were proud that we helped 13 of those people, those clients win their licenses in that state. I think Florida eventually will be a good state. I think there's still some issues in Florida that they're working through. But most of the states I keep talking about are the eastern states. And then there's California. Yeah. Then, you know, there's a statistic that there are more dispensaries in Los Angeles County than there are all in the state of Colorado. And there are more cannabis facilities in the state of Colorado than there are Starbucks. So, you know, what market is always the big market? California. But, you know, we're seeing more and more East Coast getting involved. And I think the pandemic helped. You know, whether that's a help or not a help, I think the pandemic had a big factor in the in that a lot of states who are now looking for extra money to come in realize that this is something they're missing out on.
Yeah, absolutely. And we, you know, we spent so much time starting this podcast kind of at the beginning of the pandemic, celebrating that essential business designation, and then talking about not only just states, but other countries who are seeing cannabis as a potential economic driver and, you know, to help with economic recovery. You did mention before we started recording, and something I want to make sure we just touch on, that as someone who is an industry veteran, who's watched this industry develop and been a part of it for the last 8 years, you have seen some of the pitfalls of the industry. And while we've maybe touched on those a little bit in our conversation, what are some of those pitfalls? You know, what can we do to address them just as an industry as a whole?
Well, I think one of the biggest pitfalls I see a lot with clients that we speak to who want to get into the industry is, you know, and I call it, it's a very sexy industry. You know, you tell someone that you work in a car dealership, they go, okay, you know, or I work in a steel mill. You tell someone you sell pot, they get really, you know, wow, that's pretty cool, you know. So it's a sexy industry. And we get a lot of clients who want to come into this industry, and they don't quite understand what's involved. This is an industry that you have to be 100% committed in. You know, you have to understand that you're going to need X amount of dollars. And if you don't have X amount of dollars, then save that money, because you're not going to win and you're going to lose that money. You have to have that level of commitment. What is your involvement? You know, almost everybody that I work with had a career before they entered the cannabis industry, whether they own convenience stores or pawn shops or they own something else. You know, they've come into this industry. So this is a kind of a second career, you know, that they've done. Even if you grew in your basement, it doesn't, you know, the largest grow facility I ever built out the security for was a 450,000 square foot facility. We put 105,000 plants in the ground. You don't do that in your basement. So you have to have that level of commitment. I think that's a huge pitfall. I think a lot of times people will take your money knowing you have no chance of winning. And I find that appalling that that could happen. But that would be one of the main things. And the other thing is, when I talk about 100% commitment, you need to make sure you have a good team. You need to understand what happens if you win. You know, I saw that in Missouri. We had people that won, and then they're like, well, I didn't expect to win. Well, now you've won. What are you going to do with that license? And they don't. They didn't do anything with it. So what's your game plan if you actually, believe it or not, won a license, even in California, if you won the license? So that's another pitfall that I see a lot of that. And then I see a lot of times people just doesn't understand how the operations of the business works. How are you going to make money? You know, it's great that you're going to open up that dispensary, but how do you stay solvent for 5 years? How do you make sure, you know, cannabis is a plant that dies? It's an agricultural plant. How do you make sure that you're going to be profitable if you own a cultivation facility or a craft grow or something of that nature? So understanding those three, I think, are the biggest pitfalls that I've seen.
No, it makes a lot of sense. If we were to see some kind of sweeping federal legalization, whether that was the MORE Act or something else here in the next couple of years, you think it would change a lot of what you do? I mean, you think the phone would just be ringing off the hook a lot more? Or how do you think federal legalization, maybe it wouldn't at all, but change the application process? Would it still be, you know, what you've kind of described as this state by state thing where everybody decides what works better for their jurisdiction? Or do you think if we were to see some kind of federal legalization, it would change the application and licensing process for some of these businesses? Just want to get your thoughts on that.
I think in some extent it would. I think what we see if federal came in would be more relaxation of banking, more relaxation of insurance. I feel good where we are in those two industries, but I think it would open up a little bit more. I think the big thing that would open up is if you had interstate commerce. Now you're talking about companies that are really going to come in because they're the Budweiser of cannabis, you know, the Coors, I should say, we're in Colorado, of cannabis, where now not only can I service that one state, but I can go out to 50 states and have a couple of huge cultivation facilities and put 1,000 dispensaries across the United States. I think that's where we're going to see some game changing. You know, from my end, you know, if the industry did go federally, we're going to see a lot more dollars coming into that. How will that affect us from a security point of view? It could range from large companies coming in or large companies still staying out, depending on what's going on. You know, keep in mind, when we talk about some of these other companies I talked about, industries, tobacco, firearm, liquor, you know, pawn, they've been around for hundreds of years. They're still not big companies that are in, you know. So whether Wells Fargo or Bank of America are going to come in or not, they still may not, even if it's federal. But I do see that there'll be a change in how you go about getting licenses. Then I could see a company applying in Texas, Oklahoma, New Mexico, and Louisiana more so than just devoting all their attention in Texas, say.
Yeah. No, I really appreciate all of the insight that you've shared in this conversation. It's been incredibly educational, and you know, you're certainly the guy to go to, and Sapphire Risk is certainly the place to go to for people who are in this process and, you know, realize that those points matter, which they certainly do. Where can we learn more information about you and about Sapphire Risk?
So our website is sapphirerisk.com. And my name is Tony Gallo. I could be reached at tgallo@sapphirerisk.com. We're nationwide. Like I said, we've been in 31 states, so we can cover anywhere throughout the United States. We've done work in Canada also. We're always, the one thing I find very exciting is I just recently had a client in West Virginia who crossed over from another industry, and the excitement in his voice, you know, how happy he was that he won the license. I still get excited when that happens to me. You know, we work with a lot of multi-state operators and a lot of big corporate companies in the cannabis industry. But when I get that one individual who wins that dispensary license or the group that got together and they're going to do the cultivation, that's what really gets me going.
Still special.
Yes.
Even after all this time.
Very much so.
It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on here and to speak with you today, Tony.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hoban Minute. Do you have any ideas for episode topics or guests? We would like to hear from you. Reach out to us at media@hoban.law and stay tuned for more on the Hoban Minute.